We have explained that Christian Science as a collective body draws its power from the first mental plane. On the next plane, the intuitional, there is withdrawal from the hard intellectual condition. On the third plane, where the influence of the first and second planes becomes perfectly balanced and merged, we arrive at a state of consciousness or intelligence which might be called divine wisdom. We must differentiate between intellect, which conditions life on the first mental plane, and that wider consciousness which exists on the third mental plane which we call intelligence. This is a very part of the divine mind. Very many men, alas, who are thought by their fellows to be clever and intellectual really lack intelligence. From this plane of divine intelligence or wisdom we can draw creative power, but not that power which produces form on the astral planes. The power which can produce an actual substance, as Jesus demonstrated in the story of the loaves and fishes. On all the planes of being we have described well angels of light and angels of darkness. Can you grasp this fact with all its implications? Perhaps you have hitherto imagined that all the dark angels are flung down to exist in some pit of degradation, while the angels of light are raised to the highest heaven to sit at God's right hand? Nothing can be more erroneous than any such idea, which has for centuries falsified man's outlook on both good and evil. Tonight it is my mission to awaken men to the realization that these dual armies of intelligent beings, or if you will, the angels of light and darkness, work and evolve side by side, and are necessary one to the other. This fact must be assimilated before any clear conception of the real nature of good and evil can dawn. Hitherto men have conceived that good must always oppose evil. Nothing is farther from the truth. Evil is always an essential complement to that quality or condition man calls good, and without the existence of evil good could not evolve or exist. 133 Let us consider again the angels of light and darkness, realizing that these two powers labor hand in hand unceasingly for the soul of man, in order to perfect in him that divine intelligence which ever strives to manifest itself through all varieties of form and substance. From every plane of spiritual activity, including the third mental plane of meditation and contemplation, this angelic work goes forward. From this third plane can be drawn power, which, reaching the earth, can penetrate down even to the lower forms of creation, much as the rays of sunlight and sun, power descend upon the earth. The lower the plane of existence, however, the less active is that power from on high. We have said that from all the planes of spiritual life and consciousness there can be drawn a power which can be and is being utilized by men, either for good or ill. Never run away with the idea that all spiritual power from on high must necessarily be good or white. What then of the principalities and powers of darkness, the adversaries and princes of the shadow spoken of by Saint Paul, who being a disciple of the ancient wisdom knew both good and evil at their true worth? We can recognize many an instance of men and women utilizing such powers for their own selfish and evil purposes. Think back, over the life, history of many a war, lord and conqueror, many a financier who has enriched himself by beggaring other men, if you want an example. Are these ideas too difficult for you to accept at present? Surely not. Take for example a man who becomes over-anxious to acquire wealth in order to benefit himself. Once he has attracted these powers to himself, something within him more forceful than his own will for gain drives him onward. Eventually he reaches a state when despite his own longing to stop money, grabbing he cannot, even if by now he loathes the wealth which enslaves him. Control is lost. The money piles up in an influx he is unable to arrest, although by now no man knows better than he the burden and curse of wealth. Other examples of this nature can be found in the successful writer, the dramatist, the statesman, and indeed in any walk of life. 134 Where men lust for wealth or power. Beware lest the driver himself becomes the driven soul. Beware. The angels of darkness shark at work. If you wish you can trace out for yourselves the operation of this shadowing power overriding many a life which has ended in failure and disaster. Would it not be altogether better for the world if all evil could be destroyed forevermore, so that only good would remain? If such a happening as this is conceivable, would it be desirable? Or would it end in disaster? We ourselves cannot see that any such happening would make for a suddenly perfected world, but rather the reverse. Will it help if you visualize two great wheels, two rings, two cycles ever evolving one against the other, each holding and maintaining as it were by a magnetic force, the position of the other? Does this give any indication how Providence works towards the enlargement of man's soul, towards its harmonization with the divine? We would impress this on all people, were we able, that which man calls evil is also of God, the universal intelligence. Which man calls God contains in itself both good and evil. I know that such a statement as this must create controversy. I can only give the truth as I know and see it to be. For each of us must labor and strive so to live that we attain a perfectly balanced life, so that darkness shall never overcome the light in us, but rather that good and evil shall together, not as masters but as our servants, work out in us the perfect law with perfect precision. At the present time there comes an overruling, an overshadowing of the world by the powers of darkness. The earth has to readjust herself, or to find again and maintain her moral balance, to strive after a balanced perfection which in itself is beyond good and evil. For it is ordained that good and evil shall become servants to man, even as they are now goddess here Arthur Conan Doyle, partially failed to get his meaning across in words, but by his gestures endeavored to indicate two immense cycles ever turning one against the other, ever in a perfect rhythm and by this rhythm maintaining the moral balance of the world, much as centrifugal and centripetal force keep a planet poised in the solar system. 135 servants helping to work out his perfect plan. That is the ultimate. It is only when individual man is raised above his physical and personal thought, life, that he can realize life as one stupendous whole, and see life revealed as one comprehensive allness of God wherein there is no enduring difference between good and evil, black and white. At this some questioner will ask, if what you say is true, are we not robbed of all impetus towards good? What need is there for anyone to try to improve the world, or himself, if after all there is no real difference between right and wrong? We might just as well rub along in any old way, if everything is going to come right in the end. We remind you that as the stars are poised in the heavens, so also is every human soul poised in the eternal cycle of life, is held thereby and within the unsleeping consciousness of the divine intelligence. It is true that the soul has been given a measure of free will, or power of choice, so that it can accept or reject good or evil, but it has no power at any time to sever its link with the supreme soul, God, and there is always an upward pull towards God. True enough, for a time the soul may deride, deny or reject God, but it can never escape from him, never break its link with him, and in its extremity it must surely yield to him, and return to him like the prodigal son in the parable. What is happening while the soul is resolved to resist the pull of God which draws it upward? It means that by his own will the man chooses the downward instead of the upward path. Mark, he has not escaped from God, not even for a moment. The magnetic power of the divine intelligence ever holds fast, is ever inclining him to tread the path back to God. Yet through myriad transgressions he will follow the path of evil, downwards, downwards. At last comes the inevitable change of heart, the arising, the beginning of the long upward climb with bleeding feet back to God. This is why no man can ever escape his destiny, which is to attain to ultimate perfection through an ultimate return to his Creator. Yet it is true that before man can become godlike he must pass through the lowest arc, must bottom the depths of evil as well as attain the heights, must pass through the deepest hell and touch the high heaven which is his eventual home. When the personal man can grasp a truth so tremendous as tills he will cease to condemn any fellow creature, for then the bright ideal of man's perfect soul, towards which both he and all his fellow creatures are striving through good and through evil, will fill his heart with gladness. He will then think, my brother's path is his choice alone, my path is mine. What matter? Why should I condemn anyone? the human ego can attain by this path alone to mastership, first over its own weaknesses and failings, then over its environment and the many limitations with which human life is encompassed. We are endeavoring to reach up to spheres of cosmic life which are above both the mental and celestial spheres we have described. From such spheres, beings of the highest spiritual consciousness can ascend and descend, and are still able to maintain touch with mortal man. When a man by continual effort can get into touch with such beings, he can receive clear communications from the inhabitants of other planets. Although man has long tried to invent an instrument in order to obtain such communications, he will eventually learn that only within his own inner self, interpreted by his own spiritual intelligence, can anything of the kind be established. First, man must attain to brotherhood with his fellow man in social and national life, and then to brotherhood between nations. Later will follow an interplanetary brotherhood, born of the interplanetary communication which will someday become possible when the consciousness of humanity is raised. First, however, we have to learn the basic elements of such brotherhood. Man cannot live by bread alone, but by every word which proceeded out of the mouth of God. In other words, man can only accomplish or attain to fullness of living through constant contact with spiritual truths. We are well aware that our statements about the real nature, it is worth recalling that this prediction of interplanetary communication was given some 20 years before the advent of spaceships and saucers from other planets was reported. 136. Of good and evil will evoke much criticism. Nevertheless, we are emphasize the fact that these two are not so opposed in nature as their appearance seems to warrant. Marching in step with the creative power of good must always tread the destructive power of evil. During his earth life, man finds it essential to destroy or consume rubbish and garbage. So it is with the economics of the universe. Might we not describe the angels of darkness, therefore, as the individualized powers of evil, representative of great destructive forces which consume all that is unwanted in the scheme of existence in a process of perpetual absorption and destruction of things, habits, customs, of modes of thought and living, which have become out of date and undesirable? You see, we are suggesting that the powers of evil come under a cloak which hides an ultimate goodness. Being themselves negative in nature, they must absorb from life, from human and universal life, all that needs to be cast off or discarded. But, while they appear to destroy, in reality they do not destroy, although we have said they consume, actually they transmute. Let us conceive them as agents which are ever active, transmuting all that is undesirable in our midst to the eventually useful and beautiful. Let us recall our idea of the two mighty cycles, shall we say, of Goddess evolving purpose or plan, which men call positive or negative, or, roundly, good and evil. Each is the complement of the other, both are necessary to the scheme of creation of the Absolute. As certainly as night follows day and day night, does evil balance good and good evil. This process of transmutation of good to evil, of evil to good, is ever proceeding. In this fashion the great cycles roll onward through eons of time, their eventual purpose being to help the soul of all humanity to attain perfect balance and perfect harmony. When attained at last, this perfect culmination always heralds yet another putting forth of Goddess energies for the creation of new worlds destined for the habitation of new races of men. The house of God is thus ever in process of enlargement to make ready for the day when his children return from their wanderings in time and space. 137. These are only some of the reasons which make it utterly impossible for the finite mind ever to comprehend eternity. Again, we can only help you by suggesting that eternity is best represented by the great wheel which is never checked, never halted on its course. Yes, God is both good and evil. God contains both good and evil within himself. It is only your conception of evil which is wrong. Therefore you must accept what we say. May we suggest that evil as man sees it is rather man's thought, concept of evil than its real self? If any person exists thinking only about satisfying himself and his desires, he lives a selfish one-pointed existence in a state of darkness which men call evil. If on the other hand, sparing nothing for himself, he lives and labors to help and serve his fellows in common brotherhood, he then dwells in the light, and draws fresh light to himself by opening himself to the heaven world. Cannot you see that that which seeks either good or evil is merely a reflection, is only the outer raw personal self of the real man, and that the inner man, made in God's image, knows that both are one and the same in that they serve God? Man looks out at the world around him and seeing much ignorance, cruelty and evil asserts that it is impossible to deny the reality of evil. His conclusion is based on false premises. What possible means has any man of judging whether a fellow creature serves either good or evil? His opinion is largely based on the conventions of his age, or the customs of his particular country. What seems good at one time is often declared wholly evil by a later generation, or by people of another continent. We have yet to speak of an order of beings seldom described, but I think they are usually known as angelic beings, winged beings, the great devas whose powers hold the ordering of many lives, who command such wondrous power that without it man's world would lack much of its fragrance and sweetness. I speak also of the angels of birth and of motherhood, and of the kindly angels of death, of the angels of music, of art and literature. Inserted, the devas control the group, souls of the nature kingdom, of which ants and bees are a prominent example, but their powers extend beyond the insect to the vegetable, animal and bird life. Page 138. Does the creative artist ever dream that the emotions of which music, art and beauty are the outcome, that the vibrations which are so fine, so delicate, originate from spheres beyond the dull earth environment, from heights outside the compass of human mentality? All spiritual beauty must emanate from the heaven worlds and the heavenly beings inhabiting it. Yes, these winged angels are dual personalities crowned by the love born one to the other and to the whole universe. It is profoundly difficult to express spiritual realities with words fitted only to describe material and physical conditions. Nevertheless, I would hold out to all people a hope beautiful and true beyond compare. I would assure them of the progress to be won by man's constant desire for beauty, love and wisdom. I would describe a life perfect in its power to express all the higher feelings and attributes which lie hidden in the depths of man's nature. Not one soul, whether it be of a white, a black, a yellow or a red man, but finds provision made for it in the vast universe of spirit. I would paint such a picture of the heaven world, were I able, that it must satisfy every desire and fire the imagination of every living soul on earth. Were the words mine, I would show a world of spirit ever revolving, opening to new vista after vista of beauty. As one attains, one sees fresh heights beyond. The air grows finer, brighter. Exaltation fills one's being, nerving one to fresh efforts and attainment. 139. Might almost segregate communications into two separate grades, communication which is but experimental, and communion of the spirit, which will someday grow so pure and blessed as to become sacramental. Communion such as this must come as a holy and blessed form of dedication, meant for the ennoblement of life both incarnate and discarnate. It is true that time, new education and realizations are necessary to dispel the present day ignorance of these matters. May this work of ours serve that purpose, at least to a degree, by bringing a gleam of God's truth to men. The other branch of investigation, that of psychical research, should have its doors rigidly shut against the curious and the sensation seeker. There should no longer be exploitation of the sensitive human instruments through which contact with the beyond comes. All must be put into proper place. Law and order must come in these matters, and a more reverent understanding of the beauty and wonder of mediumship. Let us realize that the rituals of the Roman Catholic and High Anglican churches are designed to call on the planes of power. One can at once feel this potency on entering any church where higher ritual is practiced. Everything, the incense, the way the censer is used, and even the form of administration of the blessing, is practiced with deliberate intention to create this power and distribute it among the worshippers. I have visited many a church since I became discarnate to witness this process at work. I have seen how the strains of music influence the minds of the worshippers, how they themselves contribute to the power by the action of their emotional body. On the other hand, in nonconformist churches, where ornate ritual has become a plain and simple devotion, if a true purity of heart and purpose be present, a power will also gather, but of a somewhat different order. In some of these, however, a spiritual coldness creeps in, a lack of fire and life due to complacency, so that those who gather to worship tend to become over satisfied with themselves, to think themselves God's chosen people. I shall be severely criticized, but this also has been noted in my journeyings. As to the wisdom and rightness of using ritual, music, and the like, to attract and to maintain power over the people, we remind you that there can be use and abuse of all things. Doubt, less power rightly obtained and rightly put to use forms part of the creative plan, since such powers lie within man waiting for use, and if by knowledge and intelligence and by purity of ideals and aspirations the man becomes linked to the higher celestial spheres, he attracts these powers to himself by his own spiritual growth. We have told you that the Christian religion was the purest, containing as it does a kernel of pure truth. We would now elucidate this statement. We shall be challenged as to the doctrine of the vicarious atonement and the meaning of the words, I am the way, the truth and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. This is still a sad stumbling block to many people. They have yet to realize, as I now realize, the spiritual meaning behind these words. We do not propound any gospel of vicarious atonement. We are assured that as a man sows, so must he surely reap, that nobody else can ever take from him the responsibility of his own evil thinking and doing. But when a man, however sunken, reaches that point where his soul is illumined by a truth created by and through the power and the love of Christ, he is born again and his old self dies. In that way only does Christ preserve him, redeem him from ignorance, sin and darkness, and point him to eternal life. To every soul, whether spiritualist, orthodox Christian, Buddhist, atheist, there will come this dawning of the light of God, or, in other words, this coming of Christ the Beloved, for every soul, no matter what its label, however much it deny its master, must someday enter heaven through the narrow gate, through the immeasurable love and the perfect wisdom of the compassionate Christ. On the last occasion we spoke of the Buddhist belief. This too needs amplification. The Buddhist of today holds that the ultimate and supreme goal of his existence is to enter the sphere of life known to him as Nirvana. He therefore desires to reincarnate as speedily as possible in order that he may hasten through many a life and ultimately reach freedom from rebirth. He 156. 157 believes that Nirvana will release him from this eternal round. In Nirvana he will find peace, having lost himself in desirelessness, in nothingness. His error lies in his interpretation of the teachings of the Buddha. So also are the teachings of Jesus presented in very different guise from the truths given to his disciples 2,000 years ago. The Lord Buddha came to point the way to that ultimate surrender which every human soul must make, which is the resignation of itself to the Supreme. By his own profound experience he had proved that only as a little child in simplicity and trust can a man enter the kingdom. This he taught his people. One more point, if you follow the true vision of the Spirit, you will find all this truth in the ancient wisdom, the source of all religion both of the East and West. You will find the place of the disquieted spirits described, the higher astral spheres, the mental, celestial and universal spheres of life. All the teachers through all the ages have returned to earth with much the same revelation. What a glorious destiny is thus revealed to any man ready to renounce self and its desires for the service of man and God. Chapter 9. The Healing of All Disease. It will be seen that Arthur Conan Doyle assumes that his reader both understands and accepts the existence and reality of the etheric and astral bodies as part of earthly man, and furthermore that someday the medical world will accept this truth, and find its outlook, and treatment of disease, revolutionized because of it, realizing that disease of the body is something at its final stage of externalization after a long period of inner causation. In other words, someday medicine will study the causes, where it is at present trying to cure the effects of disease. It is from this standpoint that Arthur Conan Doyle begins his message on this, the cause and cure of all disease. It is truly said that medical science will be compelled someday to study psychic and spiritual laws. When I recall the operations I once had to witness as a doctor, I now shudder with horror and disgust. Yet I appreciate the fact that many lives are being saved by the skill of the surgeon. But I dare to add that many more lives, and the sanity thereof, will be saved when the medical world makes a study of man's astral body and its well-being. Certain rays exist which, when men can open themselves to the divine intelligence, can be used to heal their bodies. This will depend not so much on the quality of the healer's intellect as on his spiritual intelligence or insight, which will enable him to attract these rays to himself, much as a magnet attracts, and redirect the light through his patient. This is only one of the new ways of healing someday to be assimilated when medicine is open to receive information concerning light and color rays. How truly has it been said that all that is needed for health, healing and sustenance waits in the universal for man's use and comfort. Unfortunately, however, those who are spiritually ignorant cannot draw on this abundance of goddess supply. It is equally difficult, if not impossible, for those who possess this knowledge to convey it to others. It must dawn from the soul's own understanding, and the time will surely come when light from the cosmic Christ will thus illumine man's enshadowed understanding. He will then awaken out of darkness. Page 159. I am not working singly in this matter, I am but one of a hand of workers and have been purposely strengthened and taught many things. It has been my particular task to be the spokesman, and so bring these messages back. Much that I pass on has been given to me for that special purpose, although my mind has caught many a glimpse of the glories I attempt to describe. I know that these things are, but cannot truly say that I have experienced all these wonders, and yet it would seem at times as though the whole panorama of human life opens before me, and I see not only into the past but into the future of the world and of humanity. Great changes are coming. A wonderful light is streaming down onto the earth, and humanity is responding. According to the degree of its response, so will humanity become more spiritual and its world more etherealized. Maybe, my friends, you would like us to speak of something more akin to your own human life, more simple, more understandable to you. Dear friends, these things of which we speak are among the simplest of Goddess gifts to his children. During past centuries many methods of healing sickness have become known and practiced. Each would appear to be effective, but only in certain cases, and none in all. It is now our task to trace the source of the healer's power, as well as seek out the origin of disease. In spite of the controversy these statements may arouse, disease originates, not as may be thought in the mental state of the patient, but usually far deeper. It may sometimes begin in man's conscious mind, it is true, sometimes in the subconscious, but more often in the pre-conscious. By the last term we mean a condition of consciousness far older than there. Life now being lived, but one which can be brought over from the man's past lives, a consciousness which extends back through many ages or incarnations. But this must not be confused with what is known to the psychologist as man's racial instinct. We suggest that the pre-conscious mind appertains to man's ego, to his spirit, whereas what might be called his instinctive mind appertains to the animal and racial instincts which may be inherent, but are not necessarily related to or coordinated with the pre-consciousness of man, which is a part of the universal or spiritual heritage which all men share. It would seem that this pre-conscious state is unknown in the animal world. The public today is more concerned with man's conscious and subconscious minds, recognizing that they are responsible for many of the minor complaints of the body and can even aggravate some of its major complaints. There are also many diseases the cause of which cannot be traced to the conscious or subconscious minds. We have mentioned the healer's source of supply, but have yet to classify the healers into their several sections.